Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This hour is brought to you by CarX Tire and Auto, online at CarX.com.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
Tom McGee to Rosen. Watson fields it. Pull up 13-footer. Good.
Wow. Nice shot right there.
This is a play the Bulls want. DeRozan blasts down, marking it, and lays it in left angle with the right hand. DeMar with 24. Sits DeRozan between the legs, dribble one-on-one with a spin to the rim. Up. Got it! DeMar DeRozan with big time onions. He just put the Jazz in the spin cycle. Ball game over. Bulls win. Bulls win. Bulls win. 114-104.
Yay!
That's perfect on the rejoin.
They beat a young and hungry Jazz team, but that Jazz team was also not very bright.
No, not at the end. And you could tell not having your point guard, like the difference that that makes at the end of this thing. That's what happened to them last night. Lowry Markkanen, though. Man,
on offense,
we've known what his deficiencies are on defense. The way the level of aggression that he is playing, or aggressiveness that he's playing with.
Thank you. It's a pet peeve of mine.
I know it is. That he's been playing with has been outstanding, and seeing him do it last night, it makes you go, man, how long do you want to wait on P-Will?
He did it a couple times last night. Patrick hit the Jets a couple times. Like, last night was a reminder that he's fast.
Mm-hmm.
He isn't just big and strong. He's actually fast. He just go. Go. But I thought they won that game almost by attrition. They won that game by staying the course. They won the game by playing their game. It's not the prettiest that they do, but there was a moment late when Zach finally allowed Vooch to repost, where he had it. Vooch had it in the post. There were mismatches all night, switching all night. Guards on Vooch and girls on film. And they
girls on film,
guards on Vooch. And he kicked it out to Zach. I'm like, oh, here's a contested three. But oh my God, the skies opened and the light shone, and Zach got it back to Vooch after he snuggled his way down there into better position, sealed his guy, and laid it in. And it was old-fashioned big man mismatch basketball. And the Bulls got to do some of this stuff. The Bulls have to do that. And they did. And they stayed with it. And I mentioned during transition, they're going to lose games because they're old and kind of clunky. But their savvy, their patience, their awareness helped them stay the course and beat a team that and allowed the Jazz to beat themselves with turnovers and ill-advised shots and missed free throws.
One of my biggest pet peeves in watching Bulls basketball has been what you're talking about, Dan, where they switch and you see the mismatch happen with Vooch in the post with a guard or a small forward on him. Give him the ball immediately. Immediately. That's easy money. And the Bulls, for whatever reason, and sometimes you've got entry passing is an art. I understand that.
Lost one. Lob passing, the spin bounce that used to be a staple of guard play. No one knows how to do that. Now, listen to me. Get off my lawn.
It's valuable, though. Like, when you still have a player that primarily works in the post like Vooch does. I mean, it's not that he can't do other stuff. But when you got to figure out how to get him the ball. And they've been bad with angles for him to get the ball in the post for a really long time. I enjoyed that win for a lot of different reasons. You had the white man can't jump thing where DeMar gets the ball exactly where Zach needs it to get up there, get on back there and dunk it. Kobe White was amazing off the bench. He did everything that you want him to do. He hit threes at a high clip. He pushed pace when he was out there on the floor, and he finished at the rim, which is not something that you think of him as a player, but he was out there doing it last night, and it was awesome.
If you can make sure you're not asking him to do things he's bad at, if you're not asking him to be a half-court point guard, he can be very valuable for you. By the way, we just crossed 10,000.
All right.
$10,000 raised, that's going to turn to 20. So we're close to being on pace here. Want to get as close to 25K as we can by the end of the show at 2. It's going to keep going on Twitter after the show, but that is just fantastic. Text SCORE to 76728 to have your gift doubled. Go to score.givesmart.com to help send kids with cancer and leukemia to camp and our various other programs. We have crossed 10,000, so keep it rolling, keep it rolling. Thank you. Now, you mentioned White Men Can't Jump, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Last night on episode 1 of the Organizations Win Championships podcast, OWC pod.
Wait, stop. This is a new podcast.
Yes.
Man. You have to tell people what the podcast is.
It is a Bulls podcast with Dan Bernstein and Jason Bernstein. We talk about the Bulls. We update. We do some post-game stuff. We do some preview stuff. We do the OWC College Showdown because Jason prides himself on knowing where every current NBA player went to college. So I surprise him with three, and then he gives me three vintage players anywhere from 1980 through early 2000s, and I have to name where they went. I got one out of three last night.
Okay.
He got three out of three, and I was trying to pick some tough ones.
Where can people find the podcast?
Anywhere you get your podcast, whether it's you can go directly to Odyssey. It is an Odyssey 2400 Sports podcast. You can get it at Odyssey. You can get it at Spotify. You can get it at Stitcher. You can get it at Apple Podcasts. You can get it Audible. Wherever you go, Organizations Win Championships is the name of it. Thank you for that. Now I want to throw up on my shoes because the White Sox have announced their coaching staff. Wait, I haven't gotten to the names yet.
I brought back the organ yes. just for this.
You made an executive decision.
Yes.
All right, go ahead, Gene Honda.
All right, well, let's start with what we know. We know that the bench coach of your 2023 White Sox under Pedro Grifol is Charlie Montoyo.
At pitching coach, Ethan Katz.
I think that that's the best piece of hockey organ sound.
Well, some of this, the real old stuff, some of this is from the old Spectrum.
Yes.
And it's not just local.
I love that. Your bullpen coach returning, Kurt Hassler.
At hitting coach, Jose Castro.
That's the Wrigley organ,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Assistant hitting coach, Chris Johnson.
The first base coach is Daryl Boston.
I told you, Debo wasn't going nowhere.
Yeah, you know what? They should just let him actually live there.
He just makes it like a like, cottage.
Like we used to say about Elgin Baylor in Secaucus because the Clippers
were
always in the lottery. We just said they were just going to hold the lottery at Elgin Baylor's house. I just think that Daryl Boston should just in the coach's box there have like an efficiency apartment.
I told you he wasn't going nowhere. Third base coach, the brother of Benny the Jet, Eddie Rodriguez.
Who the hell is that?
Eddie Rodriguez.
Now, I don't know what this job is.
Yes, we need to talk about this.
But congratulations to the newly named Major League Field Coordinator. If your field needs coordination, the man to do it is Mike Tosar.
And the Senior Director of Sports Performance, Jeff Head.
Vice President of Vitamins, Gern Blanston.
And Vice President of Schmovit, Blair Rasmussen.
It should have been Dr. Rasmussen.
No, that's right. Yeah, he's not a doctor. That's why he can't get him.
Dr. Blair Rasmussen.
That's why he's in charge of Schmovit, because he can't get him, and he doesn't know. So he's not a doctor anymore.
Now, do we determine to the coaching staff who reports to whom in the organization and who tells whom what everyone else is saying about him?
I don't know.
All of them.
Right. They all, there's an ownership. There's some of Rick's guys, some of Kenny's guys, maybe some of Jerry's guys, and maybe a couple of Grifols' guys.
Yes.
Is Pete's got his people. And then they all will report on what everybody's saying about everybody because it's a real healthy situation all the way around.
Oh, the White Sox, man. Oh. They're great, man. They're great. I'm excited about Pedro Grifol, I think. And his staff that he get to put together.
That's like that sounds like Ron Jaworski saying he's excited about Tyler Palco. Ooh. I'm excited about Tyler Palco.
Oh, that was
I'm
bad.
Lying.
He yeah. completely lying.
Yeah, he was lying. So, back to the Organizations Win Championships podcast, when you're talking about White Men Can't Jump, we ended up creating a new movie when Jason last night.
Isn't Jack Harlow now going to be yes. Billy yes. Ho?
You guys can call yes. me crazy, but I'm excited about Tyler Palco tonight.
Yeah, you're crazy. You are out of your damn fool mind. So at one point, Jason uttered the line, "Some bums can jump."
Oh, that'd be a great movie.
We were trying to think. That's I don't know what happens, but the name of the movie that we created out of whole cloth was "Some Bums Can Jump."
Yeah, the
Derek Jones Jr.
Yeah, it's the Derek Jones Jr.
Well, he's mad about me for not liking Javonte as much as he does.
Like, okay,
because Javonte is his Ivan Calderon.
Gotcha.
He has an irrational Javonte attraction. He just loves everything about Javonte.
Well, it seems like Jason enjoys players that play hard all the time.
It's not just that. And tries to dunk everything all the time, no matter what.
Yeah.
He just loves, but he's not.
If you're not a 3-point shooter, go and dunk everything all the time.
No, but my point is, I'm not going to deny him his crush. He's just know that he's not good.
No, he's not good.
Right, but that's the thing. He's having trouble getting past that blood-brain barrier there.
He's an NBA player that provides... He understands his role. He yes. knows his role, and he shuts his mouth. He understands what he's supposed to do. I come yes. off the bench. I provide energy. I run the floor.
I
jump as high as I can, and I try to dunk over everybody. I don't care who's in the lane. I don't care how big they are. Mm-hmm. I don't care if they're waiting for me at the rim. I am going there.
Yeah, that's his guy. That's
it's
his like
guy to have.
Guiding basketball spirit. But I was trying to explain that that's fine, and you can love him, but just you know, no, and he will have no.
I mean,
no
I'm
besmirching
sure,
of Javonte.
I'm sure Jason probably loves Giannis too.
Well, but that's so different. That's a star.
That's my yeah. point. As long as he understands that Javonte
yes.
isn't a star, and that. It's okay to love a role player.
Yeah, I think that his irrational love is part of the bit. I think that he's just leaning into it completely and refusing to accept anything less than Javonte's enshrinement in Valhalla.
Texter says, listening to the coaching staff for the Sox is about as enjoyable as taking a shot of Malort.
I like Malort.
Here's the thing. It's not as if that we were expecting some great, like, crazy hire from the White Sox staff, but it does illustrate that there are still some fiefdoms in the White Sox as an organization.
But Darryl Boston's a bad first base coach. He's a bad first base coach.
Isn't he also, wasn't he your outfielding coach too?
I don't know what you have to do.
I still, Mike, have we gotten an answer on what the field coordinator does?
No.
I've seen the language as it pertains to a minor league instructor as field coordinator. I am curious on what that and didn't James say that he was going to ask that question when they get an opportunity to talk with Pedro or with Rick on what that is?
Who are you and what do you do?
Is this the guy that will be in charge? The way it sounds, is he the guy that will be in charge of what happens per his orders from Pedro Grifol with how the White Sox prepare for each game when they're actually on the field? I know. I would like answers to that. I would like to know what this person does.
Especially now, if it's not like he's in charge of shifting.
Right.
What happened? Well, is Shelly Duncan still there? Or is he gone?
I think Shelly Duncan's gone. I think he has to go with La Russa.
Okay.
He can only work jobs that his dad had or he had with La Russa. Right?
Why is Daryl Boston back?
You know why he's back.
I know, but he doesn't do any aspect of his job well.
Okay. But that's never really seemed to matter to the White Sox.
This is a text from Bill in Capitol Hill. Being a White Sox fan is like running a suicide hotline for lemmings.
Wow.
That's dark.
That's super dark.
That's really dark. Well, what do you expect? It's Bill.
Mm, it's true. That is dark, though. So, yeah, like we're having it's November and none of it really matters that much. So we're having a little fun with it. What's your face doing right now?
Wait. Breaking news here. This breaking news on 670 The Score is presented.
Are we sure? Did you fall for the banana in the tailpipe?
This was sent to our email from Ryan Porth.
Oh, if Porth sent it, then it's all good.
That's all you need. It presented by BetQL. Smarter bets start with BetQL. Download the BetQL app or visit BetQL.com today. According to Shams Charania of The Athletic, the Chicago Bulls signed head coach Billy Donovan to a contract extension before the start of the season, league sources told The Athletic. Donovan, who guided the Bulls to the playoffs for the first time in 4 years, had 2 years remaining on his original four-year contract and is now under contract for several more years.
Why would you do that? Why would you do that?
Maybe that means they're going to trade off the core.
And start over again? But no, they were thinking that they were... No, when they signed Billy to this contract, they were thinking that they were on the trajectory of being a contending team. Right? I don't understand why you would sign him with 2 years left. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
I don't know, man.
Maybe that's why Billy feels a lot more emboldened to be like, hey, Zach and DeMar and Vooch, I will say what I need to say publicly about you guys' ability to not be good at basketball sometimes. What? Why do it? I don't get it.
I like Billy. I like him a lot.
I
think he's a good coach, but I want to know, I'd like to hear from them about what their reasoning was.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem to make a lot of sense.
We just got some information here. This is John Greenberg of The Athletic, who's trying to answer your question. He said, this is how the field coordinator job was explained to me by a guy who had the job in Tampa.
Okay.
He says it's like an assistant bench coach. So this is John Greenberg found this.
So this is the guy that he wanted to be his bench coach.
He said, I get to do a little bit of everything. Expertise in catching, but I get to help out with advancing the opposing hitters, advanced scouting the opposing hitters, all the end of game stuff, two seats down so I can hear what the manager and the bench coach are talking about, trying to coordinate the schedules of when we're going to do stuff and how we're
going to
do it.
That's what I was saying. The guy that's going to put the guys on the field and run their warm-ups or practices before game.
It sounds like assistant bench coach.
Sounds like it was the guy that he wanted to hire as the bench coach. So he found him the next best job.
Exactly.
But Rick had hired his bench coach for him. And Rick got to keep his pitching coach and bullpen coach, and Kenny got to keep his first base coach.
Did you ever get an answer to your question about was Charlie Montoyo originally interviewed for the managerial job?
No.
That's not critical.
I've not gotten an answer to that question. I'm curious about it. I'm okay with it, too. Like I don't want to act like I don't like the hire of Charlie Montoyo. I just wonder, did he end up being a recommendation as bench coach because they talked to him about possibly managing? Like, you know what? If no one hires this guy, we should put him on our staff to help a first-time manager. I'm curious about it. But there's stuff. We'll get back to the Billy Donovan contract, and we'll get back to the White Sox and all sorts of stuff. But the Big Ten right now is a story. All the way up and down from what's going on with Fitz at Northwestern to all of the new hires that have been made in the last couple of days. Mike Hall of the Big Ten Network is going to join us to talk about it next. It's Bernstein and Holmes here on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Bernstein and Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com in Odyssey Station.
The Michigan sideline spills out on the field at the Horseshoe in Columbus. And for the first time since 99 and 2000, the Michigan Wolverines have beaten the Ohio State Buckeyes in back-to-back seasons. As the final seconds tick away off the clock here at the Horseshoe, a battle of undefeated teams goes to the Wolverines. Final score, Michigan 45, Ohio State 23. The Michigan Wolverines are headed to the Big Ten Championship game.
Let's talk Big Ten football because there's a lot to discuss. Mike Hall is on Twitter at Mike Hall here. The Big Ten Network studio host joins us on the Score Hotline presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And when we went to break, we just got some Big Ten news, in fact, that Pat Fitzgerald, there's consequences at Northwestern when you have back-to-back bad seasons.
And you've gone 14-31 in the last four seasons.
Northwestern has fired defensive coordinator Jim O'Neill, defensive line coach Marty Long, and wide receivers coach Dennis Springer. So, Mike, is this just the issue of the deflector shields being knocked away so the head coach can keep his hold on power?
Boy, other than that, Mrs. Lincoln. he had to make changes. He had to. Within the last 3 years, he lost his longtime defensive coordinator and longtime offensive coordinator. And he brought in new guys, and they just haven't worked. So it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, listen, he's as close to a lifelong contract actually being a lifelong contract as anyone in the sports world, right? Because of his personality, his attitude, his legacy as a player, and he's been a great coach the vast majority of his time there. But, you know, you brought up a couple numbers, Lawrence. You could bring up a couple more. I mean, this has been a bad trajectory the last couple of years for that program.
It has been, and it's also there's been change. Like, it isn't the same people who hired him because that guy's running the ACC now. Right. And he's no longer in Evanston. So I do wonder, like, with a move like this, like, that's massive for him to make changes at this level. I wonder if a guy that has the best job in sports overall, if there's any worry for him that there needs to be some results that go on top of all the things that make Fitz Fitz.
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's one of those things, we know the history of Northwestern, right? The 80s, the 70s, the 60s. There was a lot of one-win seasons, and it was a lot of disappointment there. But the way the program has been, I mean, two of the last 5 years, they were division champions. So they've proven you can be a good team there, and they've done it with him. The downside of that is when you've proven that, then people want that. And I don't think the bar is as high there, you know, as Wisconsin or anybody else, but they don't want to be this bad, right? If a down year is a 5 or a 6 win year, I think people in Evanston are fine with that if that's your down year. But when it's back to the one win levels and they just look lost when you watch them play this year, that's where I think it starts to rile people up. And then as you bring up, the AD is now a commissioner of a different conference and it's a new regime and people love their own people. So, yeah, I think Fitz is taking things seriously, that he knows there's got to be changes in Evanston.
Fun stat, Dan. Northwestern did not win a game in America this year.
That's right.
That's true.
They won that first game. It was impressive. That win was impressive.
However, we thought it was.
And then it wasn't.
They are the most dominant team overseas of
that's
American
right.
football teams. So they are undefeated overseas this year.
That's right. That's a way to spin it in a positive way.
So let's rank some of these relative Big Ten crises at the moment, because Iowa is got their own unrest, concerns about coaching nepotism and offensive problems. Wisconsin has made their huge move. Nebraska's yep. made their huge move. But, man, with all this stuff going on, Mel Tucker and that big contract, he's not hearing a lot of his name in headlines right now. It might be good for him, but East Lansing, not a happy place.
Yeah, there's problems. Obviously, the fight in the Michigan tunnel is a black eye, and that's obviously, you could argue that's an isolated couple players, but still, it's a part of a group, and it reflects the whole group. The season was a massive disappointment, especially where they were last year. And if you wanted, you could look at Tucker's entire head coaching resume and saying he's had one great season and the rest have not been there. He's got leeway because just the fact is he signed this massive deal. So they're going to be patient with him for a little while, but he has the same AD that hired him. So I don't think they're losing it, but I think, you know, they need more. They can't do what they did last year, and he tried to raid the transfer portal this year with the same success he had last year, but he didn't have a Kenneth Walker this year, and that was a massive game-changing player for him in the transfer portal. They could run the ball for, you know, 150 yards every game last year when they had him, and they just didn't have that, and so that made a big difference on the field.
Mike, I'm curious what you think about this. I've been sitting around thinking about what's been happening at Michigan. I can't. It's weird to me. It's like they've been so good and it's been super quiet. Like, it's a strange thing for a national brand like Michigan to have the type of success that they've had the 2 years, and it's almost like an afterthought. Like, people were expecting that Ohio State would vanquish them and move up into that spot. And Jim Harbaugh has just, the last 2 years, done an incredible job with the program.
Lawrence, think where we were 2 years ago. Most Maize and Blue fans wanted him gone. I mean, 2 years ago, it was, this is it. He can't beat Ohio State. He's only going to be a 9-10 win coach here. This has been a failure. And there were national discussions of, hang on a second, if this guy who is getting to the NFC championship game every other year and is a Michigan man through and through can't save this program, what does it say about the future of this program as a national power? That's where we were just 2 years ago.
2 years ago, he was the Vikings coach.
Right. Well, this offseason is when he flirted so hard with them. And then another national narrative was like, well, he's lost the locker room. How could he possibly keep the locker room if all those guys know he wanted to leave for an NFL job but didn't get it? And then he's turned it all around. And this year is better than last year was. And he did it while losing guys to the NFL draft. And you could have said, well, you know, he was great last year, but he had an Aiden Hutchinson, and that's a generational talent. But, like, he's replaced him. And he's done an unbelievable job. I think the reason it's quiet is partly because, quite honestly, he's a little different, right?
Yes.
He's a little different, and it doesn't resonate, and it doesn't give you that sense of, you know, I'm trying to think, like a Jim Tressel, you were like, oh, well, this guy's got it all together. Even Ryan Day has that, like, everything is composed and is normal. And I think because Harbaugh's a little different, I think the narrative is sort of like, well, how real is this? Despite the fact that at Stanford and at the Niners and at Michigan, he's now won big in three very different programs. They should be bigger in terms of a national voice. They will be, because they're in the playoff. I think even if they lose to Purdue, they'll still be in the playoff. So this will help, and back-to-back years in the playoff will help fix that. But I think the other thing, Lawrence, is the insane dominance of their rival for the last decade and a half. It sort of changed perceptions of, like, well, if they beat them last year, okay, but clearly Ohio State's going to be the better program. They have been better recruiting year in, year out. They have been better, with exception of last year and this year, on the field in an almost unprecedented way in that rivalry's history. But it might be time for people to start changing their opinions, because this is a different program, and that was a beatdown they delivered on Saturday.
So with everything that's happening with these, especially the coaching changes at heritage programs like Wisconsin and Nebraska, what are reasonable aspirations for Illinois under Brett Bielema? Like, what is an outsized hope, and what is a reasonable hope for Illini football fans?
Dan, I think that question, the appropriate way to answer it, depends on what happens with divisions in the future. The way that the divisions are set up now, Illinois can dream to be what Wisconsin has been. That is the height of their goal. They can be a 10 or 11 win team at their best and fight for a division title and fight to be a top 10 program for various weeks at their best. If divisions go away, it just makes it so much harder, because not only do you have to be better than Penn State and Ohio State and Michigan and sometimes Michigan State and sometimes Wisconsin, but you're adding USC and UCLA, and those two programs are both with a trajectory pointing upward. Then it starts to make it much harder. Then you're starting to see their ceiling being more of like maybe an 8 or a 9 win program. However, I got to say, almost everything Bielema has done since he got there has impressed me and has felt like the right thing. Like, from little details to, you know, like when Lovie Smith was there, he couldn't have cared less about recruiting the state of Illinois. He didn't try. There were multiple years when he literally had zero kids from his home state. And Bielema looked at the numbers and realized it may not be Pennsylvania or Ohio, but there's a lot of good kids. And if you can get 3-4 of the top 10 kids in state to stay, that can snowball downward. And so his first week, Bielema was calling every single high school head coach in the state, laying the groundwork. Now, I will say, you know, we do our signing day show, and it's coming up in a couple weeks. He hasn't made big inroads this year. But when you add, you know, recruiting is usually a year behind. So the kids who are signing now are looking at last year's results. The juniors this year that will be signing next year are looking at an 8-win Illinois team that might be a 9-win team that's going to go to a pretty good bowl game. I think that's going to build momentum. And I really think he learned from what the mistakes were at Arkansas. He learned at the very beginning from having Barry Alvarez above him to figure out how to do it and how to do it in this style with the reliance on offensive line and defensive line, getting a good running game. And then if you can find a quarterback who's above average, you can do pretty good damage. So I think their trajectory is up, but I think how high it can go, I honestly think it depends on whatever the conference decides to do in the future with divisions.
If I were someone who would be in line to be the Nebraska coach, I'm not, but if I were, like anything in the Big Ten right now would be attractive because of the success of the conference and the way that it's set up to succeed going forward. That being said, if I were Matt Rhule, and ideally you have choices, I'm not sure, considering how tough a job it might be at Nebraska, that the Arizona State job might not have been more attractive to me, because at least there you're going to have more time to get things up and running. And with Matt Rhule throughout his career, it's been first year's been bad, then he moves, and then by the time that he's ready to move on to the next job, everything is all good. Are the Nebraska people going to give him the time required to fix all of the issues with Nebraska football?
I think they don't have a choice. There has rarely been a hire that I felt was more of an absolute grand slam than when Scott Frost went to Nebraska. He was a hotshot prospect when he was the offensive coordinator at Oregon. He almost got the job a couple years before he did. But he wasn't a head coach. He didn't prove himself. Well, he proved himself at UCF, turning around a program from basically winless to undefeated in a couple years. So now he's proven he's able to be a head coach, successful. Man, when he gets the money and the resources and the history behind him at a school that he started at. I mean, there were 1,000 reasons why that was going to be a massive success, and it was instead one of the biggest flops ever. I couldn't have been more wrong on that hire. But almost everyone was wrong, right? I mean, it felt like the perfect hire. And I think they as a fan base are sort of going, it's time for us to readjust our expectations because it's not 1997 anymore. And you're right in bringing up what Rhule did at Baylor. He did it at Temple too. Mm-hmm. The two times he's been a college head coach, he took dead programs and made them fantastic. So I think their hope is it's not a 3 or 4 year rebuild, but it is more like a 1 or 2 year. And with the, you know, NIL, which, let's be honest, Nebraska has NIL money. I mean, they got incredible fan bases and boosters over there. The transfer portal, like, it is easier than ever to turn something around quickly in the world of college football. Will he be able to do it? I don't know. I mean, the biggest obstacle for them is population, right? I mean, there's a reason those teams in the South do so well, because they have so many great players nearby, and there's not many players, not only in Nebraska, but in the bordering states. So they have to go national, which you can do, especially now with NIL money and all that. It's possible. It's just a lot harder than it's going to be at other big programs.
You mentioned that you think that Michigan would be in the playoff even if they lose to Purdue. Do you think they could lose to Purdue?
I mean, it's possible. Listen, Purdue beat out Illinois, and Illinois almost beat Michigan, right? I mean, that was, what, a two-point game between Illinois and the Wolverines, and I think it came down to a field goal with 9 seconds left. So it is possible, not just because I don't think Purdue's bad, but also – you know, the great thing about college football is, right, they're 18 to 22-year-olds, and they just won the game of their lives a handful of hours ago. So is it possible there's that hangover effect? Yeah, it's possible. Aiden O'Connell's really good. Charlie Jones is a great wide receiver. They are going to throw the ball. This year they have a running game. Devin Mockabee is a true freshman, kind of a great story. He's basically a walk-on. Not many programs wanted him at all. And yet he's running for a bunch of yards. He's, I think, the third best rushing season by a freshman in Purdue history. So they've got a really good offense. Got an okay defense. It's possible, Dan, but yeah, I expect the Wolverines to win fairly easily.
What type of coverage are you doing this weekend, sir?
Well, we'll be there in Indy on Friday. I'll be taping some segments with, you know, probably some former Boilermakers and Wolverines. I think our boy Rosie Colvin is going to stop by. We'll do a one-hour show in the morning on Saturday and then a two-hour tailgate show in the afternoon as well. So we'll be all over it.
Mike, we adore you, man. You're the best.
You're right. I am. I should be on more often. I'll see you tomorrow.
You know what? You should be on more often because we didn't even talk to you about the White Sox. Yeah, we'll call you next week, fella. Thanks for the offer. We appreciate it.
Well, listen, I think anyone would say, I'll trade you Abreu for Clevenger. That's a win, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you heard they announced the coaching staff today, and Daryl Boston's coming back to coach first base.
That's fun. Right?
Isn't it?
That's going to get us out to the park.
Yeah. Bye, Mike.
Bye.
Bye.
He's the best. I love him. Such a good dude. And he married into the Score family, so.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
How many kids do they have now?
Three.
That's a lot.
Three beauties, just like their mom.
Well, and those kids are going to be enormous.
Yeah, they're going to be Avengers.
They're large people.
They're Justice League children.
That's what I thought.
That's what they had.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Not mine. Mine, no.
Well, you're as a podcaster.
not quite Justice League. Well, mine, what does he have? What's his special power? He has bull's thought.
He knows wherever...
He knows where guys went to college.
He knows where all of the people went to college. That also can get you into the Justice League.
No. That gets you. That's like the kids' table in the back. That gets you. Maybe you can work at the Justice League.
That's what
like
I'm saying.
No, but not like catering.
He's not going to be a caterer.
Like the commissary at the Justice League. They have a cafeteria, right?
Sure. He could be one of those.
You ever Eddie Izzard's been about the Death Star cafeteria?
No.
Oh, seriously?
No, I've never seen this.
You've never seen any if there were a cafeteria in the Death Star.
Okay.
And it's Vader in there and like having problems with the trays and stuff. Oh, seriously?
I think that's perfect. Like if you watch Andor, that would be very interesting.
Just look up Eddie Izzard Death Star cafeteria.
I'm seriously. On it.
Seriously. We were going to do a segment here and now we have no time.
Yeah, we need to break.
Yes.
We'll break and we'll reestablish and we'll let people know how they can help Camp One Step.
Yeah, and I'll give you an update on the numbers and then top of the hour, Russ Dorsey.
Dan Bernstein, Lawrence Holmes, middays 10 to 2 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
All right, Dan, let's update people on how they can help Camp One Step and where we're at with the total so far, with an hour to go, a little over an hour to go in our program.
just past $1,250. Thanks to everybody for these donations coming in. Every little bit helps so much.
Wait, 12,000?
Excuse me. Yes, 12,500.
Okay.
So we are halfway to the match.
Because Daniel gave more than 1,200.
Yeah, that guy fit, yeah. 12,
shout out to Daniel.
12,500, and we are halfway. That means we're at the halfway point to the match of the Marks Family Foundation. Because once we hit that 25, it becomes 50. That's 50 kids with cancer and leukemia to have their opportunity at camp. And I'll just mention, too, that if you've been to camp and if you've seen what this is, there's a lot of pediatric cancer charities out there that are hospital-based charities, that are research-based charities, that are just going to show you pictures of kids in beds and with tubes sticking out of them and just show you the how heavy the burden of cancer is. Those are all, there's so many wonderful charities who do that and can show you some of the pain that kids go through and families go through. One of the things that sets Camp One Step and our programs apart is the moment you get there, you don't see the prosthetics, you don't see the hospital beds, you just see happy kids being normal kids running around. Literally, I've seen it. If you see kids get off a bus or get away, and for the first time in forever, sometimes in the middle of chemotherapy, we've got, and this is part of why, you know, we make sure top of the line doctors at every program we have, doctors, nurses, fully staffed, fully available, even for kids who are receiving some of their chemo, can still go do the lake swim, can go fishing, can just get out in the sun and out in the dirt and play and be kids. And we, you know, I wish I could give you data about that being restorative. I don't know. We don't know. I just know that in and of itself, what it does to make those kids happy is our goal. That's what we do.
And look, we know that inflation has hit people really hard. It's been rough. The last 3 years on all of us has been really rough. And you're saying, guys, I'd like to help, but you know, I got to keep the lights on, got to keep the refrigerator filled, whatever you can spare.
Yeah, but that's
whatever
what,
you can.
That's
spare.
What the match does. $5 becomes ten, ten becomes 20, and it just the smallest bit is going to mean so much happiness because we never want to say no, ever, 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 ever. We never want to because these kids who are whether it's Lurie Children's here or Comer Children's or up in Milwaukee or in Indiana or anywhere in the world, if kids want to come to our virtual programs, literally anywhere in the world, we are now international when it comes to virtual programs, to be able to send them that box that comes virtually with everything in it, all of the activities, all that comes with it, so they can be part of all the virtual activities, so we can put together that with their name on it that can arrive at their home or at the hospital. That to be able to say you're going to camp, no matter what, or to give that goal to a kid and say, hey, you know, if we get through this, you know, this summer you're going to camp for a week. To be able to absolutely without question, yes, 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 no matter what. And the people who we have helping out for kids who don't even speak English as their first language, for the number of counselors, many of whom are former campers, mm-hmm. The number of people in our organization working in our office and working in the field at our programs who are former campers who are healthy now, who speak Spanish, speak Polish, for everything, all the outreach that we've done starting in Chicago and working into Wisconsin, into Milwaukee and beyond, and everything that we've done that, like you say, for us to provide the quality of care that we do, it is getting increasingly expensive. And these are the days that we help all of these kids. So, again, thank you for what you've done. Thanks for what you will do. score.givesmart.com or text SCORE to 76728. And the Marks Family Foundation is going to double your gift up to that $25,000 mark.
When we come back, Russ Dorsey had a sit-down with Rick Hahn. We are going to talk to him about what that means for the White Sox going forward. It's the Bernstein and Holmes Show here on The Score.